Look, if you have a clumsy child, you make him wear a helmet. If you have death-prone children, you keep a few clones of them in your lab.
Catapults of propaganda.
Alien races come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
The highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to September the 17th of 2006. It's a lovely, well, overcast.
Yeah.
Sunday evening.
But after
here in
all the sunshine we had this summer, drought conditions really here in mid-Missouri, the overcast skies, the rain that we've had all day today is really welcome.
You know what? It has been so nice today. The crickets don't even come in the house.
Which is really a change.
We've had so many crickets coming in here.
It has been, not a day goes by that we don't have to chase three or four of them out of the house. Or just, you know.
I would say that that's probably being, conservative.
Yeah. So today, anyway, was nice enough that they decided to stay outside. And we're looking forward to fall here because it has been a hot summer, mm-hmm. hot and dry here in mid-Missouri.
It has indeed. So if you're living in an area where you've already got lots of color in your leaves, oh, good for you. And if you live in the South where you don't get color in your leaves, unless you spray paint them, well,
tough.
Too bad.
Well, it's been an interesting week around the world, and we're going to comment on a few things here. And we appreciate you coming along for the ride while we blather on for the next hour or so.
Blather till we can blather
no more. It's been an interesting week. Interesting to contrast the comments and the reactions to the comments of two people you wouldn't normally mention in the same sentence: Pope Benedict and Rosie O'Donnell.
All right, secretly they've had a thing for years, but no one's known about it.
Yeah, boy,
that
would really be, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
They
that
most
would be
of all.
Really, really strange.
Well, first of all, Pope Benedict quoted one of the Byzantine emperors from like the 14th century or something in a debate that this emperor Manuel II was having with a Persian scholar, and he challenged what Muhammad brought to the table, theologically speaking, and basically said something to the effect of, show me what Muhammad brought that was new, and it was all evil, especially the spreading of religion with the point at the point of his sword.
That did not go over well. It's still not going over well.
No. In fact, Muslims have responded to this insult of being called a violent religion by firebombing five churches in the West Bank.
They slayed an elderly Italian nun in Somalia. There's a new leader, sort of a new leader in the Middle East who has taken this chance to come to the forefront. His name is Sheikh Raed Salah, and he is not only denouncing the Pope, he's using his new pulpit to claim that Jerusalem is going to be the seat of the new caliphate.
Yeah. Now, the caliphate is like global Islam. Mm-hmm. They want to reestablish the caliphate and... In his view, anyway, they want to dominate the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is their response to this quote of a 700-year-old text from a Byzantine emperor, their affront at being called a religion of violence is to start killing and threatening and firebombing. It's...
How dare you say we're violent?
Yeah, take that.
Take that back or I'm slicing your head
right off. In fact, the Sheikh Raed Salah said, quote, "With fire and blood we shall liberate Al-Aqsa," end quote. When Al-Aqsa, of course, is the dome of the rock.
What I find interesting is there was a story out at about the same time, a couple of days ago, that tens of thousands of citizens, Jewish citizens, are leaving Israel. They're not coming home. They're leaving.
That's very interesting.
Well, you know, we've seen that happen, you know, just not that long ago. The gentleman that we spoke to, who's now in Canada.
Yes, Barry Chamish.
Barry Chamish, he left, and I suppose that he might well represent the feelings of many living there now. They don't agree with the government. They don't want their children to have to participate in a war they don't believe in.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, except where do you go if you're already here?
Well, exactly. Yep. Well, if you're Mel Gibson's dad, you go to Australia. But can you do that now? I mean,
well,
come on.
Yeah, in Australia, they're likely to send you to Indonesia or East Timor.
Well, that's true. You know, if we don't do it this very minute, before we finish up today, I do want to talk about the subject of what really is stealth drafting.
Yeah.
A stealth draft in the high schools. We will,
yes. And I do want to talk about that, so I'm glad you mentioned it. But to finish up on the comparison between happened following
Rosie
the
Rosie O'Donnell.
Rosie O'Donnell, this week, of course, this is her first week on the ABC program, The View, which we never watched, but it was hard to miss the quote of her comment because it's all over YouTube now. Rosie said, quote, radical Christianity is just as threatening as radical Islam in a country like America where we have separation of church and state. Now, I'm not sure what the separation of church and state part of that sentence has to do with anything else, but the comparison of radical Christianity with radical Islam.
Well, let me just say this. Depending on how she's defining radical Christianity, first of all, that's an oxymoron.
Yes, exactly.
Christianity, by definition, does not, if you're truly a Christian, you don't participate in that kind of behavior.
Does not espouse violence, right?
Exactly. If she means fundamentalist Christians, that's one thing. If she means Christians who have, over the centuries, done the same things, then I'm not so sure she's wrong.
Well,
I have to
true.
Hear the entire statement. And mind you, I'm not a Rosie O'Donnell fan.
No. But the context in which she said what she said was a debate on what's happening in the Islamic world with radical Islamists who openly profess to want to destroy the state of Israel and want to drive the crusaders, meaning, you know, anyone who's not a Muslim, out of Saudi Arabia, Iraq, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And she said that she thinks that radical Christianity is just as dangerous. Looking back at history with the Crusades and the violence and the murder and rape and pillaging that was committed by so-called Christians, you can say that there was a that was bad, that was wrong. But by definition, it was also not Christian.
No.
It was not Christian. But the fact remains that if radical Christianity in any form as it exists today, however you define it, were truly as dangerous as radical Islam, Rosie O'Donnell would already be missing her head.
That is a very good point.
And the fact that she still has her head, and she knew that this is true, or she wouldn't have said what she said. So she's either, well, anyway.
Well, let's just face it. She does have the freedom to make that statement
exactly.
here in the United States.
And that's the
as
point.
As much as you and I complain about losing freedoms, we still can make the statements that we choose to make, regardless of how popular or, frankly, even accurate they are.
Right. And the fact is that Rosie knows it, too. And so the very fact that she made that statement means that she knows that that statement is untrue. Because if she were trying to make that kind of a statement against Islam in an Islamic nation, well, she wouldn't have made that statement because
I'm suddenly picturing a Star Trek episode where this one android was dueling with Spock, and Spock said, "Everything I tell you is a lie."
Oh yeah,
I am lying.
Yeah,
wait a minute.
Calculate pi to the nth, you know, to the final digit. So anyway, but that was just an interesting contrast there. But the fact is that she does have the right to say what she said. And here's another thing, that there are some professing Christians out there who will take it upon themselves to try to punish somebody like Rosie O'Donnell for saying something like that. And that's where you step across the line. Remember, God made it pretty clear as to who was to execute judgment in his eyes. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. Now, for us impatient humans, that sometimes takes a lot longer than we would like for people to be punished. But it's clear in Scripture that we're not supposed to take it upon ourselves to, you know, execute God's judgment on his behalf. God can't defeat these heathens unless we're carrying the sword for them.
You know what? What you and I are finding, and I'm sure many of our listeners have also observed this, the message that's coming across in entertainment, television, radio, books, short stories, graphic novels, especially graphic novels, and movies, is that God probably exists, but but he doesn't care.
Yeah, we've been watching on the Sci-Fi Channel today, which we know is a bastion of Gnostic and heretical thought.
And we watch it because that's how you find out what teens are being exposed to.
Exactly.
It's sort of like walking around in the sewer to, you know, find out what the rats know.
Mm-hmm. So they had a triple play, or it's not a trilogy, but it was three of the prophecy movies of the prophecy series back to back, which
we talked about them before, actually,
right.
Because Christopher Walken, first of all, is always fun to watch.
Yeah.
But there are little nuggets in these movies that I think sort of portray in a way what may really be taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that there are angels who truly do hate us.
Yeah. And because God created us in his image, which, as Mike Heiser explained, meant that we are to have dominion over the earth as God holds dominion over the
yes.
whole of creation.
And that one day we will judge.
We will judge the angels. That's in Scripture. And it's easy to understand why some of the angels may have taken offense at that. So there are those elements in the prophecy movies, but also it's, you know, the humans that are in the movies are never shown as actually hitting their knees and calling on God for help.
Exactly. So, exactly. That's our biggest complaint
right.
about them. You know, why do that? Because God is not really listening.
Yeah.
That's the message there, sadly.
Had a little bit of an interesting debate, as long as we're talking about entertainment. And the local newspaper, the Columbia Daily Tribune, has a columnist who devotes his column to video games. And he wrote in his blog about a video game based on 9/11 or speculating and said, you know, look, it will probably happen someday that someone will create a video game based on 9/11.
It's probably out there already.
Yeah, because of that kid up in Canada who shot up his school after playing that video
the
game
Columbine
based on the Columbine
game.
Massacre.
Yeah.
And so he asked people, would you play such a game if it were available? And some people said, no, that's horrible. It's in poor taste. Others said, at some point it will be like playing a game based on Pearl Harbor. It will just be an historic event rather than something that, it's like, okay, but I tossed in my two cents and said, well, why not a video game based on 9/11, you know, tongue in cheek? I mean, we've got a video game out there being put forward by the guys who wrote the Left Behind books based on the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And while
you and I complain about it all the
time. We complain about it. And there were some people who responded to my post that, oh, that's fictional. That's made up. Who cares about that? I said, no, wait a minute. Just wait a minute here. Back up a second. How do modern militaries train their soldiers to kill? How does the United States military train its soldiers to kill?
Mm-hmm.
With video games.
Exactly.
In World War II, I found this out after, you know, starting to dig into this, only 15% of American soldiers could actually pull the trigger on an exposed German or Japanese enemy. Only 15%.
Mm-hmm. By that you mean that they didn't have, they just weren't able emotionally.
Right.
To pull the trigger. They were trained to do it.
Right. But they trained, they found, after the war was over, and they analyzed why this was so. And the percentage was much higher when they were in a group with an officer yelling at them to shoot, shoot, shoot.
Mm-hmm.
But an individual soldier presented with an open shot and an enemy soldier, they found, was only able to shoot about 15% mm-hmm. of the time. They trained those soldiers for World War II shooting at bullseyes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by Vietnam, the percentage of soldiers who was able to pull the trigger was up to 90%. Because they'd been training them to shoot at silhouettes of human targets.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now you see where I'm going with this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the listeners do too.
Right. So how does that translate to the video games that our kids are seeing today? First-person shooters, some of the most popular PC and video games on the market right now were developed by companies as training programs for the United States military.
Mm-hmm.
So take that and apply it to this Left Behind video game in which you are rewarded points for blowing away the forces of the Antichrist with automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm. Or, worse yet, that you can be on the enemy's side
right.
and blow up the Christians.
Right. So, is it disturbing to have a video game based on 9/11? Yes. Is it disturbing? To me, though, it is just as disturbing, if not more so, to have a game presented as biblically based and marketed through the megachurches and rewarding kids for doing the same thing, killing the enemy with weapons. So my two cents worth on the state of culture today.
Well, you know how I feel about it. I love video games. I really do. I love playing Zelda, but I like to fight monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are clearly not human in any way, shape, or form, like Ganon. He's a giant monster. I like fighting. That's what I think is enjoyable. I cringe at the thought of ever having to strike a blow against a human-type opponent.
Right.
And sadly, there are a lot of kids growing up, good kids, good families, that are playing games that pit them against a humanoid opponent of some kind. And oftentimes, it's not just humanoid, it's a human.
Human, right. There are some, Grand Theft Auto is the one that is most often named as this sort of really dangerous game for kids to play because of the messages that it teaches. But there are others, one called Sniper that we saw previewed on one of the video game channels or tech TV or something, where you play a police sniper and you have to, you know, with a high powered rifle looking through a sight as part of this game, shoot, you know, the bad guys. But it's so realistic in having to sight and shoot a human that it's just really chilling. It's how we're being dehumanized. I mean, when we were kids, we didn't have video games to do this sort of thing. We would go out and we'd play army. You know, my friends and I, we'd use a stick or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if I, you know, shoot John, bang, bang, I got you. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. And, you know, one of us would get mad and, you know, bonk the other kid with a rock or, you know, then he'd go home, tell his mom, and then I'd get in big trouble. So you learn a lesson that there were consequences to the actions. Mm-hmm. But in video games, you don't have that kind of feedback. You get rewarded for shooting the other guys, and some of these games are really realistic with a lot of blood and gore and guts. So it's a dangerous thing. And again, I think it's very telling.
More and more dangerous because with the Wii and games that are like that, these next gen games, gaming consoles that allow you to, instead of pushing buttons, you really feel like you're holding a weapon.
Right. The next generation of Nintendo controller, which is called the Wii, W-I-I, has a controller that is like gravity-based where you actually move it around in the direction that you want things to happen. Mm-hmm. So if you're wielding a sword, you actually have to make motions like you're fighting with a sword. So it's, you know, I didn't get into this when I was talking to the video game columnist on the air the other day, but it struck me as this is a, you know, half a step toward the next generation of combat training sims for the military.
Well, you and I often talk about how the things that are in the news, how the spiritual aspect affects the things that you and I see in the news.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that these video games have the potential, and I think they actually are used in this way, but let me just be very cautious and say they have the potential to be used in a very sinister way by someone. If you think of the things that Russ Dizdar has talked to us about.
Right.
The Black Awakening.
Yep.
Now imagine a young child growing up playing video games that have, let me use my writer's imagination, a frequency built into the video game.
Mm-hmm.
That helps that person override any compulsion, you know, that might say you can't harm another human.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine to do the video game, but okay, now imagine towers that are sort of like cell phone towers suddenly beaming out that frequency.
Mm-hmm. This is very X-Files.
And children are put suddenly into the, or the teen, who's now a teen, he or she may suddenly go into this mindset. Now, if you happen to be a teen, male or female, who has grown into a dark sort of person, and I'm thinking the kind of kids that hang out at vampirefreaks.com,
right.
The kind of kids that claim to be the chosen, the ones who are part of, they believe, the Black Awakening, that are ready to be used as soldiers.
Yep.
Now, imagine this sort of signal.
And this is not far from the realm
of
possibility.
It's not far from the realm
human,
of possibility.
Yeah, the human, well, life in general, biological life, is essentially just an organic, we're organic systems that operate on electrical impulses.
Mm-hmm.
We operate on electricity, electromagnetic energy.
That's not to belittle what we are. We are created by God. But that is his design.
That is his design, right. And so using electromagnetic energy, such as EM waves at some frequency, to modify brain activity mm-hmm. is certainly within the realm of modern current technology.
Now imagine a child like the one, the young man who just recently went into the lunchroom in a high school and killed,
mm-hmm.
shot several of his classmates in the Columbine manner, and mm-hmm. he had been playing the Columbine game. Now imagine if he had been a test case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's.
We just want to see if we can get him to do it.
It's entirely possible, and again, this relates back to what Russ Dizdar's been saying now for some time, and we're looking forward to. Getting a copy mm-hmm. of his book once it's available, the Black Awakening book. But this reminds me of a news item that I just forwarded this to Russ for his review. It was an excerpt from an article about how the American military is being stretched so very thin right now and how recruiters are having to go to extreme measures in order to keep numbers up.
Yeah, they have quotas to meet.
Right. And in order to meet their quotas, in order to retain the type of force level that we need with our commitments in Afghanistan and Iraq and elsewhere around the world, there are people who are being kept in the military who would not have been tolerated just a few years ago. And, for example, military investigators have discovered that large numbers of neo-Nazis and skinhead extremists are now serving in the military, as well as street gang members.
Mm-hmm.
They're finding street gang and neo-Nazi graffiti competing for space on the walls of buildings in Baghdad. Now, how bizarre is that? But what disturbed me about the neo-Nazis and white supremacists that are in the armed forces is that a Defense Department investigator has written a report, which was published and quoted by the New York Times, that the neo-Nazi magazine Resistance is actually recruiting for the U.S. military and trying to get these guys into the military and encouraging them to insist on being assigned to light infantry, whereupon they are encouraging them to set up networks inside various military bases and send weapons back mm-hmm. to their comrades on the outside for the coming race war,
mm-hmm.
which... it's not hard to imagine, this fitting into the scenario that Russ Dizdar has described as the Black Awakening, especially when you remember that he said so many of these cult multiples have personalities inside that speak German.
Mm-hmm.
It's
that's a very good and disturbing point. And you and I were talking about this yesterday, and I brought up then, and I'll bring it up now. We need to, I think if you have not read anything about Charlie Manson, you need to. If you grew up in a generation that's much younger than I am and you just simply are not familiar with Charlie Manson, there's all kinds of material on the internet. Find a good source. Read Helter Skelter that was written by, Bugliosi, the attorney?
Vincent
Bugliosi. There are lots of insights into Charles Manson. I think there's good evidence. Now, I don't think that Bugliosi makes this point, but I think there's good evidence out there to say that Charles Manson was not only a multiple, but he was also an asset of the government.
Yeah.
And
well, Peter LaVenda makes that case too in his book.
LaVenda makes that case. So in which book do you recall?
It was the second book, yeah. Which is...
I think he centers around Manson.
Right. And the third book, which was just released, by the way, is called The Manson Secret.
Oh, I haven't read that one.
Yeah, we need to get that one.
Yes. And we should have LaVenda on to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Manson really did believe that there was going to be a black race war.
Right.
White on black, black on white. And he believed that the whites were going to win it. And in order to get it started, he was trying to incite it.
Mm-hmm.
There was going to be a time that the blacks would rise up. In fact, he believed, and I'm not so sure that he was off on this. Now, you're going to think, she's wearing that hat again. I know she is. But the Beatles' White Album, let's face it. I'm not saying that this is what happened, but we do know that there have been rock groups, entertainment groups, not just rock, but lots of areas of entertainment, music and otherwise, that have also become assets. In fact, Elvis claimed he was an asset.
Mm-hmm.
They have been trained as multiples also. And so it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility if you are a musical multiple to write songs that have a meaning you may not be aware of.
That's a good
point.
And
then you have another multiple on the other end listening to the song who is convinced that the message was specifically for him. This is what happened with Charlie Manson. Mm-hmm. Whether the Beatles intended it or not, he believed that the song Blackbird, Rise Up, is one of the part of the lyrics in Blackbird, that referred to the black people of the United States and that they were to rise up, that was part of the Helter Skelter, which is also mm-hmm. a song from the White Album, that there was going to be a race war and he had to do things to help it get started.
You know, and this relates to the discussions that we've had with the Collins brothers about the what appears to be forces that are pushing white supremacists and the Aztlan movement mm-hmm. toward a race war in the American Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
It is not outside the realm of possibility because you see that there are powerful and wealthy forces that are supporting you know both sides. This is a classic Hegelian dialectic. You know, they create the chaos and then they develop their own mm-hmm. order, mm-hmm. new world order, perhaps, from this. Now, again, this sounds like, you know, paranoid conspiratorial ravings, but you have to consider the possibility that these things fit the evidence and that they certainly are possible when you admit the existence of the supernatural world and
Absolutely.
The forces that are contending for power and domination on this earth.
And the fact is we have the technology now to do these things. And I've said to you many times, if I can think of it, mm-hmm. somebody else has thought of it.
Sure, sure, absolutely. So we're just tracking, you know, various bits of intelligence, I guess, and then trying to compile it into some sort of sense. We're, you know, very willing to admit when things happen that don't fit our evidence or when our evidence doesn't fit our
theory. We just keep throwing stuff at the wall.
And seeing what sticks.
So, we don't have a wall of paranoia anymore, and no. I miss it.
Yeah,
but you know, we've got this wall behind me.
It's certainly large enough. If
it
we
is.
Just had a vehicle large enough to bring the wall of paranoia back with us,
we could. We'll figure something out.
Yes.
We'll get it done.
But we note while we're talking about these forces that are aligning and throwing various groups of people against another, that the neo-Nazi party in Germany appears set to gain power. They've got elections taking place, regional elections taking place today, Sunday, the 17th. And we haven't seen the results yet, although surely they're in by now because we're recording this at 7 o'clock Central Time.
This is a huge story that's just not getting airplay on television that
no.
I've seen. But it is a very interesting one because if you had 10 years ago said to a German citizen, you know, the Nazi party, the neo-Nazi party is going to gain 6 to 7% of the seats mm-hmm. in 10 years. They would have, first of all, said, that's a horrifying thing for you to say. How dare you say that?
Mm-hmm.
We are not like that.
Yeah.
And I think that many Germans today would say that. But sadly, there are a lot of countries, primarily the developed countries,
mm-hmm.
that are leaning toward that sort of regime where it's a hard line kind of regime.
And it, right. And in Germany, I think, and this particular story that we're seeing is referring to a regional election in the area called Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. And I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it correctly, but it's in northeastern Germany bordering mm-hmm. on the Baltic Sea. But note that Germany and other areas in Europe have seen a real influx of Turks and Algerians and other Arabs and Muslim peoples over the last 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I was still selling steel pipe, I used to deal with a fellow who was from Germany, now living in Houston, and said that he had just gone back to visit his family for the first time in you know 15 years, and he said it was totally different. He said there are just so many immigrants that have come into Germany because they've got a relatively open policy there as far as admitting people mm-hmm. goes. And this rise of the neo-Nazi party in Germany may be in response to that.
I think it likely is. And sadly, I'm afraid that we may be seeing the beginning of that here in the United States. I
sure.
do not agree with that sort of
Absolutely
belief.
Not.
But I think that there are some who think whites are becoming the lost, you know, and unheard voice.
Mm-hmm.
I would venture to say that very few people in Germany who are alive today have strong memories of World War II. And the young people who are moving into the realm of politics do so without that memory. They do so without that baggage.
Yeah.
That shame, frankly, of feeling like they were part of... I really believe that the majority of the German people honestly did not know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that same indictment may well apply to the United States if we keep going in the direction we are.
Exactly.
If 20 years from now we have to say, I honestly didn't know it was going on.
Right. Well, here's another story, and this, and your point leads right into this. We're seeing debate take place now in the media between left and right over whether or not we should extend certain civil rights guarantees to people at Guantanamo Bay, for example, that the Geneva Convention should apply to them. And you've got supporters of the administration saying, no, they don't deserve it because they're not enemy, you know, they're not soldiers of a foreign army. They're, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The point, though, that is overlooked, I think, by most Americans, we just aren't aware of it, that even though the president finally admitted this CIA secret prison system, the Associated Press just reported today that there are as many as 14,000 people in that system.
Mm-hmm.
14,000 people.
I've got a story.
And that, right, and this is where I found it. 70 to 90% of the detainees in Iraq in 2003 were mistakes. And this is according to a U.S. military officer.
Yes, and that's what I was about to talk about.
Right.
Thank you for bringing that up. By the way, if you have not noticed, Watcher Magazine is back and functioning. I wasn't planning on coming back until October 1st, but you know what? The enemy doesn't want us taking too much of a holiday. So, or actually, the enemy does want us taking
permanent.
A holiday. So, so we're back. Ha ha. In 2003, I think sadly, and may still be going on today, there were an awful lot of people who were grabbed from their beds who had done nothing. And were held for months, if not years.
Yeah, 70 to 90%, according to the U.S. military. And while there may be 10 to 30% of the people grabbed are truly bad guys that we do want off the streets because they're trying to hurt American soldiers, 70 to 90%, how would we as American citizens feel if 70 to 90% of the people arrested by the police turned out to be arrested by because they were fingered by somebody with a grudge, or just mistake, poor police work, or just because the police thought it was just easier to round up a whole group of people instead of look for the one perpetrator.
Well, let's face it. This is what happens when you're fighting an ideology instead of a country.
Mm-hmm.
You go in, these young men and women, your kids, my kids, are going over there with not a whole lot of training. I mean, many of them are reservists.
Mm-hmm.
They get over there and they are simply not prepared to be in a totally foreign environment, an environment where they don't speak English for the most part. It's really not Eurocentric at all. It's totally foreign. It's like going to another planet. And wonderful people, I'm sure, but if you don't understand what they're saying, you have to make the assumption everyone I see is an enemy or a potential enemy.
Sure.
So that sets up this environment of suspicion. And if someone does indeed come up to you and say, I speak English, I can help, that guy, and that guy are all your enemies. Go get them.
Yeah.
And it turns out that this man is, say, a Sunni pointing out Shiites, or a Shiite pointing out Sunnis.
Right, right. It's an ugly situation, and it's really... I think as we've learned more and more over the last couple of years about what's going on over there, it's become harder and harder to understand why our fellow professing Christians here in the United States, for the most part, are still staunchly behind the administration and saying, yeah, we need to, you know, stay the course. We need to see this thing through. We need to fight them over there so they won't fight us over here.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, you're defending this sort of... approach to dealing with our fellow humans, you know, our fellow men and women. 70 to 90% of the people taken in 2003 in Iraq by mistake, locked up without warrant, without charge, most of whom eventually let go once we realized that they weren't there for any reason. But this, the United States government is still contending to this day that it has the right to hang on to these people as long as the war on terror ends.
Mm-hmm.
When is that going to be?
Oh, it won't be. They're calling it the long war. In fact, what was it you and I heard the other day that this could go on for the next 50 years?
Easily, yeah. And I think just common sense would dictate that.
Yes.
This talk of the United States withdrawing troops from Iraq sometime next year is foolish. It is ridiculous.
And it won't happen because they're planning on putting more troops over there.
Right. We've got these super bases that are being built. They're still in the process of constructing that huge 100-acre palace that they're mm-hmm. calling an embassy, self-sufficient city, basically. We're not going to abandon all that and just leave it there.
Which
in fact, the troops on the ground, the commanders on the ground in Iraq have said privately, and I'll have to find this story to link to this, but they have said privately that they need triple the number of American soldiers over there to bring the sectarian violence under mm-hmm. control.
Well, I have heard that number even on television,
mm-hmm.
which brings us to the question of where these numbers are going to come from.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a real draft in place.
No.
The stealth draft that we mentioned earlier
mm-hmm.
is taking place in high schools because the quota, in order to meet this quota, these recruiters are lying to these impressionable, in one case, autistic high school students.
That's got to be like the worst story
Imagine I've heard. Your child, your 16-year-old autistic son, comes home and there's a piece of paper that says he's going to be in the military and that he signed it
mm-hmm.
and somehow your signature got on it.
Yeah, that is a story that I'll link to. It's an article by an author named Nick Turse, T-U-R-S-E, and the article's title isn't very complimentary. It's 12 Pentagon Steps to a Misfit Military,
mm-hmm.
and it lays out what the procedures the Pentagon is going through, what lengths the Pentagon is going mm-hmm. to try to fill its quotas. And the one case of the autistic student being recruited when he was, it's not clear that the student knew what he was doing or signing up for, is horrific. Cases of parents' signatures appearing on enlistment papers when the parents had never met the recruiter.
Mm-hmm. There's one case that was from last year, and I think it was a recruiter down in Texas who was leaving messages such as, and this is not a direct quote, but it's a paraphrase. This is so-and-so, and you have an appointment with me 2 o'clock tomorrow. If you don't show, you are subject to arrest.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I know that the recruiters are under a lot of pressure, and the majority of them, I'm sure, follow strict ethical and moral guidelines.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
But there are some who are enticed by bonuses that they're offered.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's not just the military recruiters, because in this article, it's pointed out that according to the Washington Post, the Pentagon began a program in 2002, before we went into Iraq, of using private companies to serve as headhunters to go looking for kids to pull into the military.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And on top of all this, they have now extended the age by, let's see, what is the deal here? They are now keeping guys in active duty enlistment eligibility for the United States Army is now age 42.
Well, and add to that, there's a reactivation
and
going on, which amounts to a draft.
Right. The military has, or the Marine Corps has, what they call the individual ready reserve, which means that even after you've left active duty status and returned to civilian life, you're still subject to being recalled for up to 3 years. So, a lot of guys who thought they were out and done are being called back to active duty.
What we're essentially saying is that the government needs lots of bodies on the ground.
Right.
And they don't have them.
Right. There are some estimates now that show that fully 2/3 of America's military units, army units, are not ready for combat because of, the fact that much of our hardware is deployed in desert areas and sand is real hard on machinery. The stuff is wearing out faster than they can repair it. And
a lot of these contracts go to they're no bid contracts or they go to the lowest bidder.
Yeah. Now, bear in mind that we do not for a minute, and I hope that with the story we used to open the program today, we've made it clear that we understand that we do face an enemy that wants to hurt us.
Yeah, we do. And I know that some of you out there don't agree with us on that, because we've gotten emails saying, no, Islam doesn't exist. It was created. It does exist.
Yeah.
It does exist. It goes way back to Abraham. It's a long lineage, a long feuding and a fighting cousins that just, right. You know what? It's all a part of the spiritual battle.
It is part of the spiritual battle. Now, there are radical elements within Islam that were created by yes. the West. For yes. example, the madrasas, the religious mm-hmm. schools in Pakistan that were created in the 70s to fight the Russians in Afghanistan mm-hmm. by the CIA and the Pakistan's ISI. Mm-hmm. That became the Taliban, which spawned Al-Qaeda.
Right. So you might be able to say Al-Qaeda yes. was originally a creation of the CIA.
The Muslim Brotherhood created by the Brits in the 30s. Right. And that spawned Hamas.
Do not think that Islam is a creation.
No.
No. It's a genuine set of beliefs. And many of the very, well, fundamentalist, frankly. Mm-hmm. I know that that's a word that tends to get negative thoughts. And mm-hmm. I say that because over here, fundamentalist Christians are often
the targets,
portrayed
yeah.
targets over here, yes. And really, all it means when you're a fundamentalist, it means that you believe in the fundamentals of your faith
mm-hmm.
as inerrant and immovable.
Yeah. And
on
so
those points, you are, frankly, dogmatic.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fundamentalist. Now, there are some people who are dogmatic about anything and everything, and they have a whole list of things that they add to. You know, you and I believe in grace. We believe in mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, and that's it.
Yep.
It's not grace plus something.
Yeah. Faith alone, in Christ alone, and
right.
that's it.
But once you do have that regeneration in your spirit, and you genuinely are a new creation, you are a Christian,
mm-hmm.
the Holy Spirit has changed you. Then there is fruit in your life in that you behave in a different way. Before most people get married, I don't know if you can hear the cricket in the background or not. Before most people get married, they date
mm-hmm.
all kinds of people. Once you get married, you behave differently.
Yeah.
You generally stop dating.
Generally speaking, yes.
If you're really married in your heart of hearts, you don't date.
Right.
If you're married in name only, you might date.
That's a good analogy.
But anyway, back to the fundamentalists. There are fundamentalist Islam Muslims as well. And some of these, like, I think, Ahmadinejad, and I say that because I assume that what he says is coming from his heart
mm-hmm.
and not from a political stance, that he really does believe that it is his job to usher in the end times according to Islam.
Yeah, and as we pointed out last week, there are some on the on this side of the ocean mm-hmm. who seem to feel the same way from a Christian perspective.
Right, and because
nominally
of that,
Christian.
There is a spiritual battle going on, and it's affecting this world.
Mm-hmm.
And we know how it's going to end. If you haven't read the end,
yeah.
you know, it's in the Bible.
Yeah, and again, I'll recommend Mike Heiser's excellent book, Islam and Armageddon, because he takes a slightly different view of how the end times will play out.
Mm-hmm.
For example, he doesn't see Russia as one of the kings of the North.
You know, there are differing opinions on that, and we will find out who it
yep.
is when we get there.
Right.
Because we're really all just trying to make our best guess based on the clues.
Mm-hmm.
But until we get there, we don't know. What we do know is that God wins.
Exactly. And you can be on the right side, and mm-hmm. it's a fairly simple process.
You know, this is a total left turn, and I
well,
want to
good.
Talk about it before we get out of here. George Soros. George Soros has not been in our little discussions for a while.
Well, he's aptly named, too, because he's, you know, about 65 million years old, the Georgosaurus. Oh, Soros, sorry.
He is. I picked out a picture to go with the story where he looks like he's rubbing his hands in glee.
Yeah.
Because he and his charitable organizations have decided to, well, go shopping in Africa.
Mm-hmm. He announced that he's going to give $50 million to a group called the Millennium Promise Alliance to help invest in businesses in small African villages for the purpose of starting businesses there to encourage mm-hmm. an economy. It's a what he's calling a holistic community-driven economic development initiative.
Which means that a lot of rich white guys get to make a bunch of money.
It's what's going to happen is colonialism just by another name.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
The fact is that economic development can only really take root in a country that follows law, that follows a law that treats everyone equal under the law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in America, we say that we've got that here. Obviously, we know that if you've got more money, you can buy a bigger share of justice for yourself. But for the most part, in America, it works better than just about anywhere else in the world. Surprisingly, professional economists didn't figure this out until about 1990 or 95 or so. There was a guy at Washington University in St. Louis who actually won the Nobel Prize in Economics for saying, you know what? Economic theory doesn't work unless government follows contract law. Like, duh! Because if the guy with the biggest and most guns goes in and says, give me all your money, well, how does that affect economic theory? You could just throw it out the window.
Well, so, it's just like, you know, a nation of laws. You know, we keep hearing that phrase, we're a nation of laws. We're the rule of law. Well, it doesn't work if you're going to thumb your nose at the law.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. What's interesting about Soros and his investment in Africa is that he's been doing this through NGOs in Eastern Europe for the last 15 or 20 years. His Open Society Initiative or Institute, which helped to instigate the Orange Revolution in Ukraine and the Rose Revolution in Georgia. George Soros's money was behind those revolutions.
Which helped the current administration. So don't for one minute think that he is anti-Bush.
That's right. Because the Soros groups that were working in Ukraine and Georgia and also Belarus, where they managed to lose the election somehow, those NGOs were receiving money from the U.S. State Department. Mm-hmm. So the Bush administration was giving money to groups run by Soros, who supposedly spent $20 million to defeat Bush in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
It's like pro wrestling. They fight on TV, and then afterwards they go out for drinks.
I think that's that is a sad but very accurate analogy. You know, I think there's a sort of an ancillary story going along with this. It's not a direct connection, but I'm connecting that dot. And that is the story of a group of African businessmen who just returned back home from here in the United States. They attended a biofuel conference, and they are so excited. I found this on allafrica.com. They are so excited because they're convinced that lots and lots of acres in Africa can now be used to raise biofuel.
Wait a minute.
I know.
There are people starving to death over there.
I know. And you would think if you could find a way to grow food, you could feed the people. But
No,
the article actually went on and on about how this renewable resource, you turn food into fuel.
Oh, my.
I know. It's really sick. Now,
do they not
connect that dot to George Soros, who's putting money into 10 African nations, 10 African communities.
Huh.
And the point is, he says, and his NGOs say, is to bring peace through economic development.
Yeah. You know, they could save a lot of lives over in Africa if they would just, if the world community, especially Westerners, Europeans and Americans, would quit opposing the use of DDT to spray for mosquitoes.
I know.
A couple million... Oh, gosh, it's like 2 million or 5 million. I forget the number exactly, but it's in the millions of children under the age of 5 in sub-Saharan Africa die every year from malaria because they won't spray.
So many are dying also, of course, of age.
Right.
You know, speaking of Africa, there was another story that was just in the news the last couple of days where President Bush said something that was sort of a veiled threat to send military into Darfur. In other words, if you don't stop the genocide that's taking place there, we're going to send our men in to kill you. I mean, I wish I could remember the exact quote, but it was, we will take military steps if we have to come into Darfur. And there are people on the left here in the United States who are begging the president
to do it.
To do it because they, well, and my heart is there too. I'm looking at people in Africa, people all over the world, who are simply at the bottom of the food chain. And they're the forgotten masses who don't have any kind of economics, you know, leverage, and therefore they're starving to death. They're being pushed out of their homes. They are dying of disease. They are simply being killed.
I just, you know, I agree with you there, and I just wonder why, since World War One, it's sort of become a given that the United States has its, has a responsibility to go out and police the rest of the world.
I know, but I have to say, this is one area. You and I talk a lot about how we are not Republicans and we're not Democrats. Mm-hmm. We are simply people who try to look at every issue and make the decision based on what we believe is right. And we use the Bible. Mm-hmm. We're not PC. We are BC.
Blood
we
of
don't
Christ?
Believe in politically correct. We try to be biblically correct.
Okay.
And, you know, we're humans. We don't always make it. But I have to say that when it comes to taking a look at these massive numbers of people who are dying in Africa and elsewhere, I tend to lean over toward the bleeding heart liberals.
Yeah. Isn't that disturbing? More and more I find myself agreeing with the ACLU on stuff, too.
I know,
which
but
is
I
really...
don't believe that sending an NGOs is the answer.
No. Because the NGOs are usually tied to a powerful group or individual with a lot of money who has a specific agenda.
NGO is actually a misnomer. They are not non-governmental.
Oh, no, they aren't.
They are very much governmental.
Right. And some of them, as we mentioned before, such as USAID and the others escape me at the moment. But that's one that I remember in particular, are oftentimes front organizations for the intelligence community. So,
yeah. You know what really does make a difference, though, seriously?
Hmm.
The men and women, the families who are going over to Africa and to Thailand and to China.
Yes,
and Russia,
absolutely.
And into South America to spread the gospel.
To
simply love kids and give them a home. And we've talked before about the Wheelers, and we've talked about
Bruce Germain
over in Kenya. And there are many, many others. You probably know of some that we simply aren't aware of. And if you do know of a mission group that is really doing the Lord's work and every penny goes toward the kids, please let us know. But we recently received a note from the Wheelers, and they have a new child named May, and she, totally alone, has no family. She's an orphan, and they call her May because that's when they found her, and she has no one to support her right now. So if you've ever thought, I wouldn't mind supporting one of the kids that I see on TV, you know, those commercials that you see all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for every dollar you send in, perhaps 50 or 60 cents of it goes to the actual mission work.
Mm-hmm.
100 pennies out of every dollar goes toward to helping these kids when you send it to a group like the Wheelers or to Bruce Germain,
mm-hmm.
you know, a small outfit that doesn't have a big, you know,
a lot of overhead
and is running commercials and all kinds of things. So if you're interested in that, you can sure write to us privately. You can always send us a note either to Sharon or Derek or to radio at peeringintodarkness.com. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Africa and things that have been coming out from there, this is something we talked about a couple of months back, and it hasn't gone away. Chikungunya, that mosquito-borne disease which causes extreme joint pain, chills, fever, and has lately been causing death.
I was going to say, they are finding more and more it is fatal.
It was confined at first to the Reunion Island and then spread to Mauritius and Madagascar. Mm-hmm. Now travelers have taken it to India, and in the last 15 days they've reported 14,000 new cases in India, and there is a rise in Britain. More than 115 travelers have returned to Great Britain with symptoms of chikungunya.
Right. Now, over here in the United States, we have spinach that has caused 100 people to get sick and one person has died. In India, many more people are sick.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands are sick. And this is not something that goes away. It is often, all too often, something that plagues the person for months and if not years.
There's no cure, right?
There is no cure. It's well, joint pain, and it's crippling. It can cause, apparently, it must go to cause liver failure or kidney failure or something, because it does cause death in some cases.
Yep.
But you don't hear about it. I have not heard one story on the news on television about chikungunya.
No, and we reported that there's just extremely high percentage of people on Reunion Island and in Mauritius that had contracted the disease. The 14,000 number in Ahmedabad, India, is just within the last 15 days. The total number to date is over 28,000 in India.
They have huge tents set up that simply are taking people through in lines. Anybody who's sick.
Mm-hmm. The name of the disease comes from a Swahili word which means that which bends up, because the crippling pain is so intense that the people who have it cannot stand or walk upright. Mm-hmm. So, again, we've got 100 people who've gotten sick and one dead from eating spinach here in the U.S. That's what we hear about on the news. But bear in mind, around the world, there are other things out there that are just a plane ride away.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody infected with this gets bit by a mosquito here in the U.S. and that gets transmitted. It could spread here.
Exactly.
Just as easily.
And it's only logic. If you take a pool of a million people and you've got nearly 30,000 of them now that have the disease in their bloodstreams, then more and more people are going to get sick because the mosquitoes are feeding from person to person, mm-hmm. and passing it along. And over in India, they apparently have a lot of stagnant water because
sure.
of the flooding that they've had, and the waters, even some of the rivers just aren't moving. So there are all kinds of mosquitoes that are breeding. And the same thing can happen here,
yep.
depending on the season. I know around here in the spring, good heavens, we have so much standing water.
Right. And, the other thing we hear about here, of course, is West Nile. I think we've got two people in mid-Missouri that have West Nile. But, of course, that led the news for a couple of days here. Two people!
I know. So. Well, it's sad, but if you don't have, as I said earlier, an economic stake in the world,
mm-hmm.
you don't have a voice.
That is very true. Well, gosh, this has been a cheery program, hasn't it? But, again, as we've said many times, the fact that we can still laugh at the end of this show does not mean that we take these things lightly.
No.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
It's just that we know that this world is a fallen world. This is not the way God intended it to be. And that we're looking forward to something better. It's been guaranteed, and we've got the assurance of those who were there and saw Jesus walk on the water, raise the dead, heal the sick, and rise again after the crucifixion. As the historic evidence that we have for the faith that we place in the future.
Amen. Well said. Well, let's see. What's ahead this week? First day of fall, and we've got Rosh Hashanah.
Ah, interesting.
Coming up this Saturday before you and I have our next show. The shofar will blow.
And we'll look forward to that. Certainly be more significant than the tailgate party for the Mizzou Tigers before they play Ohio University. But I dare say we'll have more people paying attention to the tailgate, at least here in Columbia.
I know. You have to go on with your life, though. But we encourage everybody, if you are a Christian, make that part of your daily life, that you spend a little bit of time in the Word. You try mm-hmm. to learn a little bit more. But understand also that gives you the blueprint on how to deal with your day-to-day life. Don't miss day-to-day life.
Exactly.
That's the important stuff.
Yeah, because the Bible's very clear on that. We're not given a spirit of fear.
That's
comes
right.
from the other side.
In fact, Paul says to always concentrate on the things that are positive, and that doesn't mean the power of positive thinking. That means don't give in to the spirit of fear. Look at those. It's the old count your blessings thing.
Yeah, amen to that.
And we've got lots of them, and I am grateful for every one of them.
Me too. Well, we've given you the email addresses. You can also weigh in at the forum anytime you like. peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
I'm not weighing in at that forum. No way, eh? I have to tell you, I got on our scales the other day, and, I really am trying to lose weight, and I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dropping a few pounds, but I got on the scale, and over the previous day, in 24 hours, according to the scale, I had dropped 20 pounds. No, the first one was almost 30 pounds.
Right.
And I was agog and aghast. And,
not Magog, though.
No, I'm never mm-hmm. that.
Yep.
And it took me several weighings to finally realize what I was doing as I was, because my lower back has hurt a little bit the last week or so. I was steadying myself by hanging on to the wall. Oh, rats, when I let go of that wall.
Gravity returned to normal.
It did indeed. Yeah. But you know what? It's all in how you perceive the world. You can look down at the scale with leaning on the wall, leaning on Jesus,
mm-hmm.
or you can let all of the worries of the world fall on your, take it all on your own, and you can see just how heavy it makes you. Huh?
Yeah. Another good analogy. That's good tying it together. Well, thanks for riding with us for this hour. We look forward to doing this again next week. In the meanwhile, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye.